right, everybody. Welcome back to the Backfields podcast. My name is Jake, and I'm joined with Adam. And I think you're going to catch on here pretty quickly that we flipped roles this week. We mentioned that last week. And this week, I'm going to be kind of quizzing Adam on a study, which we'll get into here very shortly. But as is custom around these parts, let's just start with some general. How's your week going, Adam?
Everything not fantasy related, great.
No car trouble then, I take it.
No car troubles this time. Thankfully, I got out pretty cheap, and now I just get to stress over my pitching staff.
Well, what's going on?
So I know a lot of people are having the same problem, but in our league, for those that play different, we get 8 starts. We limited it to 8 starts because it's a points league, and everyone would just kind of take as many starts as they could and rack up points. So you kind of got to pick your spots. I selected Jack Flaherty. It was a great start to the week. Wade Miley and Dustin May, back-to-back starts pulled in the second inning, and that makes my 13th and 14th pitcher injury this year.
And just to provide some context here, too, we are limited with injured list spots as well. So I don't know what that looks like for you, Adam, but you're going to be up against the wall here in a sec, I think.
We're going to have to start making some hard cuts. We'll figure it out. We're still 5-1, so I feel like I can weather the storm, but I'm not happy about it.
Speaking of cuts, have you made any interesting additions or drops this week to your roster?
So I added Mitch Bratt. I'd been kind of eyeing him, and he's been quietly pretty solid. And it was more of I wanted to drop a guy, and I don't like open roster spots. I think it's a waste of a roster spot to leave it open. So I love to steal a guy. And I thought, you know, I dropped Carson Seymour. We ranked him pretty highly in our offseason lists, and he has like 6K per nine and like 5 walks per nine. It's ugly. So I was like, instead of holding on to that, I'd rather grab Mitch Pratt, who is performing. Because of injuries, I've been able to add a couple more, including Nick Anderson and Jordan Hicks, being that we aren't limited to how many times a reliever can be entered. It's kind of how you got to win this league. Just throw as many relievers out there as you can.
You know what? I think we learned from the last couple of years of champions in that league that sometimes savvy pitching moves like using different relievers is the way to go.
Yep.
I do want to ask, since you brought up Brad, I had a Patreon reader reach out to me to ask of our opinion on Brad. You kind of got into him in terms of him performing and whatnot, but what do you think about him early on? I mean, he's I think 2021 fifth round pick, something like that.
Something like that. And I like him for the sake of, I think he's got a pretty high floor. This isn't some guy that's going to, you know, be a top point getter for an ace for years to come. But if I can get a pitching prospect that has some building value, I love to grab them and treat them like stocks, try to acquire low, sell high. And I think he's one that on our most recent list, he is up in the 110, 110s, 120s, 140s range, somewhere in that range. And I know we got some pretty smart guys making those lists. I know you have your own disagreements with said lists, but when people like that speak, I try to listen. And he's someone that seems pretty steady Eddie lately.
Yeah, no, he's definitely moving up. If you haven't been paying attention to what we're doing here at Prospects Live recently, we're updating top 30s for all of the 30 ball clubs. And Brad's definitely going to be someone that we start nudging up the list, I think, a little bit, definitely based off of some of the things that are happening in that organization right now in terms of poor performance or injuries, what have you. But Brat's definitely a sneaky play, I think, early on. I had mentioned this to the reader that reached out to us that I wasn't quite sold on his ability to start. I think that's just going back to my natural pessimism, which actually is something I wanted to mention because in a previous episode, I had talked about adding Joey Loperfido. I dropped him over the last week, and that's more not necessarily tied to his performance or lack thereof, which, to be completely honest, he hasn't been great this month. However, it's just because I needed a roster spot. We've talked about the importance of being able to churn and burn prospects, and he just happened to be the flavor of the week on the negative side, I guess.
That 40th or 50th spot in our league is a very tentative spot at best.
It really is. And it becomes, I mean, we're now what, a month and a half roughly from our first year player draft. So we're going to be seeing a lot of those guys hit the wire. So as we're doing this podcast over the course of the summer, we'll try to provide some additional context to discuss that. Speaking of which, if this is our fourth episode of the Backfields podcast, we have done three previously, all dedicated to the same series. And that was the anatomy of a number one overall prospect. Highly encourage any new listener to go check those out just because Adam and I have gotten into the weeds really with some deep prospects in terms of what it takes for a prospect to rise to number one overall. This episode is really kind of a capstone for that. I think that's the way that I described my article that I had published on Sunday. I will mention, though, that this podcast is going to be completely different from that article. That wasn't necessarily the case in the previous three versions. And moving forward, we're definitely going to take some creative freedom here and kind of get away from the Patreon content. So, Adam, now that we've kind of discussed what we've previously done, do everybody a favor and explain what we're doing today.
Yeah, so I took Jake's kind of project and I ran with it myself. His whole goal was to identify prospect profiles that could break into the top 10 or, you know, number one prospect overall. And I've kind of taken the baton and tried to identify, okay, you found a guy that does break into the top 10 or top five or whatever, and see if I can find a trend to indicate, you know, this is the, you found him, but get rid of him now before he tanks, or this is the kind of, you know, top five prospect you want to hold on to. I know that's one of the most frustrating things as a dynasty manager is to know when to sell high. And as a certified prospect hugger myself, I hate moving those top guys, but if you want to compete, you're going to have to go get good players. And to get good players, you got to use good players. And if you can find and identify the ones to get rid of before they tank, that's a worthwhile venture. So my data set, similar to, but a little different, instead of the top 10 prospects from the last 10 years, I narrowed it down to the top five bats and then went all the way back to 2003. They will vary slightly from Jake's data set in the sense that, I tried to solidify it to the preseason top five. So for example, Manny Machado didn't crack Jake's, but he does crack mine. I kind of identified a couple trends and a couple of fun little tidbits here for you.
Well, let's just kind of dive into it. So you mentioned the difference in the data sets. One of my findings was a heavy presence of certain positions. Tell me, what did you find when you went back to 2003? Were there any trends for, you know, shortstops or first basemen, anything that we've previously touched on?
Yeah, it kind of supports our findings there. Obviously, shortstop and outfield really dominated the list. There were 105 players and 80 unique players. Of those unique players, 26 were shortstop, 31 were outfielders. Then third baseman had the 11th most. Then you have catcher at 7, which kind of surprised me. Second base at 4, and first base only had 1. And reminder for those thinking, hey, what about Torkelson? What about Vladdy? If they came in as a third baseman, they stayed at third base. If they came in as a shortstop, they stayed at shortstop. So we have a couple players that, you know, Vladdy Torkelson, Joe Mauer for the Twins fans that want to count him as a first baseman, I guess. Those all stayed in their drafted position. The other demographic that I tried to keep track of, high school, there were 43 unique players drafted out of high school. 14 were drafted out of college. 22 of them were international players. And then there were 2 junior college players. And Jake, I would like to test you here. Name the 2 junior college players.
Well, I can definitely give you one because I distinctly remember tanking in my fantasy league the year that Bryce Harper reclassified and skipped his senior year and enrolled in some junior college. So it's definitely got to be him. Beyond that, so I know the answer just because I saw it on your spreadsheet. I would not have gotten it. So it's Desmond Jennings, to spoil it for everybody. I honestly thought he was a high schooler.
So I believe he was drafted as a high schooler and then did not sign, went to JUCO for a year, kind of the Bryce Harper route.
Could it have been a draft and follow type? I don't know if anybody really remembers that terminology or not. That's been a long time ago.
Well, Jake, let me tell you, it's a one. It's back.
I know, and I'm very disappointed that that's not a option on Out of the Park Baseball. I think I've told you that before. That's all I want in my life, but I digress.
They give you everything but you want what you want, Jake.
Exactly correct. Anyway, so I just want to recap here. We're talking about the top 5 hitters over the last 21 years. So Adam actually went back to 2003. In mine, it was for the last 10 years, so back to 2014. I mentioned that specifically because the data set is slightly different here. And Adam, do me a favor. What did you find? What was the change in time? So did the trends change from 2003 to 2023? What did you see happening?
The largest change, by far, international guys. You have Jose Reyes in 2003, Andy Marte in 2005, Aceides Escobar 2009, and then Profar, Jesus Montero, Oscar Taveras, Bogey, Miguel Sano, they all just kind of jump on the page. By the time you hit 2018, it is purely international guys covering that top 5, whereas before it was almost exclusively draft.
Yeah, that was one of my first takeaways too when I was looking at your data. That and, you know, the heavy presence, I guess, of first round draft picks, which you'll get into. Mm-hmm. But in my series, I was basically making a plea to fantasy players or anybody that was just interested in player development to definitely look into the international market. It's fascinating to me, though, had I done this 10 years ago, the answer would have been just don't do that. That's just what it comes down to. It's very fascinating. And it really does show that the game is growing internationally. We know these players are becoming overnight millionaires. It's great for the sport, I think, to have this second market basically in which we can pry talent from. And that market was always there, but it's clearly becoming more notable, I guess.
And to your point, 10 years ago, you would have been correct to basically avoid it. The data that I found showed that Jose Reyes was an offensive contributor. A quick reminder that, Jake, your data set was geared towards real-life top 5 prospect lists. I took the view of I want to find the fantasy guys that we care about.
Sure.
So I focused exclusively on offense. And so that took out players like Aceides Escobar. He was a net negative by quite a bit. And then you have Jerickson Profar and Jesus Montero, both negatives. You don't have a big win in the international market until Xander Bogaerts in 2014.
So I'm curious then, as you're, you know, looking at all of this information and trying to synthesize it, I think everybody is wanting to know, you know, not necessarily what the takeaway is. We'll get to that in due time. But if we're trying to find commonalities between these players, did you notice anything from that standpoint?
the biggest, I guess, and maybe I'll have to ask you to reword the question, but
sure.
The commonalities I found were, in general, international guys have the highest high and the lowest low by a lot. High school guys come in second with the second biggest variance. College guys are pretty steady. I mean, obviously you're going to have your big hits and misses. And then JUCO's was quite skewed because of Bryce Harper.
Sure. And I mean, Desmond Jennings wasn't that bad, but I think generally speaking, JUCO kids just don't come into pro ball with much of a pedigree.
No.
Unless they reclassify, right? We've seen that before.
To that point, pedigree was the other thing that you alluded to earlier. It's first round pick, 1-5, 1-6, 1-1, 1-2, 1-1. You only have Grady Sizemore in the third round. And then you have to wait until 2010 for Stanton in the second round and Desmond Jennings in the 10th. Then you have Dominic Brown, who was a 20th round pick. And then again, another slew of first round guys. So I guess one of the first and biggest takeaways is everyone loves finding that second round guy that breaks out. Those may not be your true studs. It the pedigree, as much as it's boring to say, if they come into the game with everyone thinking they're a stud, they're much more likely to leave the game as a stud.
You know, I'm reviewing this information again in the last 10 years. So that's what I focused on, but I'm using your list for this purpose. So from 2014 until 2023, not a single second rounder or anyone above or after a first round pick shows up on a top five prospect list until Gunnar Henderson this past year. He was a second round pick. That's very interesting to me.
And the other part of, I don't know if you saw, but I did my best to track down the signing bonuses for the international guys because, and I wish I could have found it, but I had found an article a long time ago that explained basically 1 million. You got to get in the 7-digit range to be an impact international guy. And that is true if you exclude Tatis and Acuna. So obviously there are exceptions to any rule, but other than that, you have Guerrero, Eloy, Wander Franco, Robert, and Julio, all 7 digits or above.
Did you happen to find any trends or statistics basically that support, I don't know, maybe one organization being better or potentially worse, I suppose, at identifying elite talent when we're talking, you know, top five hitters?
Yeah, I did. And I will say this with the caveat of the belief that any organization is all, like, their top pick is going to hit because they always hit is a dangerous way to load up your farm system. That being said, I definitely do use that occasionally. I will say I'm a victim to my own biases, but I found that in this data set, the AL East specifically was the best at it, led by the Tampa Bay Rays, or Devil Rays, if you want to include the past. They had this. They had 7 individuals. The next highest kind of surprised me as the Angels with 5. And then you had a 4-way tie with 4 in Minnesota, which also surprised me. Baltimore, top draft picks are always fun. Atlanta and New York Mets were the other two that kind of surprised me, but those were kind of the top teams. Jake, if I were to tell you there was one team, exactly one, that did not have a single player in this data set, who would you guess?
That's a great question.
If you don't get it, you will absolutely kick yourself.
Well, it's not Kansas City. I can tell you that. No, so that's really all that I care about. I honestly don't know. The Pirates?
No, they had three. It is the
Oakland I guess I should. Well, you know what? That checks out. The Pirates, you know, I should have known better too, because they've had first overall pick for many, many years.
Well, and their successes weren't their first overall picks.
You mean Brian Bullington's not a elite pitcher or wasn't a Hall of Fame guy? I'm shocked.
No, Andrew McCutchen being their biggest win here. And what surprised me and kind of made me kind of open my eyes to how good he was one of the top overall performers in this entire data set.
He, at his peak, he was an MVP candidate. He won an MVP. So, I mean, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. He drug that sad franchise into relevancy in the mid-teens.
I see we're going to lose one fan base today.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm still pretty bitter about Starling Marte and McCutchen embarrassing my Cardinals year after year in the regular season. So I hold a small grudge, but it's a beautiful ballpark.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. So let's talk about the success of these players for a little bit. We've identified that the top five hitters over the last 21 years are, you know, spread across the board, but really confined to what breaks down to three positions. You establish that it's really shortstop, it's really outfield, and it's really third base with a little bit of, you know, catcher and second base thrown in, not really first base. I'm guessing, I haven't actually confirmed this, but I'm guessing that first base prospect was either Prince Fielder or Mark Teixeira. Is that correct?
Mark Teixeira was a third baseman.
Oh,
the first base prospect is Casey Kochman.
Oh, well, there's one of your Angels ones.
Yep. And he was one of our worst performing players.
Which goes back to the point that, you know, from a practical standpoint, first base prospects are never going to be elite prospects. We talked about that in the anatomy series. But also, there's just a certain level of volatility when it comes to that position from a performance standpoint. So I'm not surprised.
Mm-mm. They don't get to hold their job if they're not performing.
Exactly. So tell me then a little bit about the outcomes here. You know, I think the question we're eventually going to lead to, is it valuable to have a top five hitting prospect? I'm guessing we can all, you know, get there. But everything else, should we expect success?
So before I jump into that, I did want to point out, as we have said multiple times on here, there is no such thing as a pitching prospect. One of the things I did notice is, as the years went on, specifically 2012 and after, it is almost all 1 through 5, 1 through 6, 1 through 7. In 2012, we had, I calculated the average rank of the top five. 2012, we had a 6. 2013, we had a 5. And then it goes 3, 3, 4, 3, 3, 3 being the lowest you can rank. Before that, it was kind of similar. But it goes to tell you, be very careful with your pitching prospects. But that's not the point of the whole thing. That was just something I noticed. As far as things I recognized for your hitting prospects, my goal was to see if I can find something that tells you, I don't want this one, and I'm going to sell high. And I identified a couple trends. I do want to have the caveats that this isn't the perfect sample size. You know, you could drag it out to the top 20 bats, and this whole thing could change. But one of the more specific things I saw is, if you were the third best player at your position in the top five, it did not have a good outcome. I'll just list some names. Steven Drew in 2006, Travis Snyder in 2009, Colby Rasmus in 2008, Desmond Jennings 2010, Dom Brown 2010, Billy Hamilton 2013, Addison Russell 2015, Orlando Arcia 2016, Ahmed Rosario 2017, and then Eloy being the one that kind of breaks that mold in 2018. But I bet if you roster him, you really don't feel like feel as if he has broken that mold multiple times. And the other more specific thing I noticed is being on this list multiple times in the top five, it's not a great thing, whether it be injuries or if you're that good and you don't break out in your second year, like get to the majors, there is a problem essentially. And I did have a couple of findings that I titled Adley Ruins Everything. And that's because service time manipulation is a B word and it kind of ruins a couple things. But those that were on the list 3 years, Delmon Young, Cameron Maybin, Byron Buxton, who is electric when on the field, and then Adley Rutschman, because of course. And I guess the last big conclusion I was able to draw is that being on this list and being 23 or older doesn't have good outcomes either. And it kind of goes back to if you're on this list and that old, it's because you haven't broken into the majors at a younger age. And you posed the question pre-recording if that might just be because you're wasting peak years. I pose the question, is it because you're a late bloomer that burns brightly and, you know, half as long?
I think both of those are distinct possibilities, actually. And, you know, that might be worth a follow-up conversation between you and me.
Yeah. And to kind of back up that 23 or older, I wanted to list, and we'll go backwards to kind of show you from most recent to, you know, past, to kind of show you that that rule may be, that trend may be breaking, and see if you can identify why that might be. So you have Royce Lewis, Adley Rutschman, Shohei Ohtani, Chris Bryant, Travis Darno, Dustin Ackley, Desmond Jennings, Pedro Alvarez, Matt Wieters, and Alex Gordon. Notice any fun trends specifically at the beginning?
I mean, there's a bunch of college guys there, but I don't think that's what you're alluding to.
Nope. Service time manipulation is a B word.
Fair enough. And now we know. You know, earlier you had mentioned the likes of Delmon Young and Cameron Maybin and prospects like that back from, like, that's the timeline, basically, like 2005 roughly is when I was really getting into fantasy baseball for the first time. That's just some serious throwbacks for me, man. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I appreciated the most, and you can basically conforming the spreadsheet for me. Memory lane.
I am glad I can provide you some old-timing fond memories.
I remember getting Rocco Baldelli's like rookie card and being like blown away with it. And then, of course, doesn't really become anything but a manager.
Oh, God. Manager that might not be able to win in the postseason.
Yeah. So I think in the previous episodes, you've done pretty well with throwing some curveballs at me. I want to do the same for you, Adam.
Oh, joy.
And looking at all of the information that you've completed or compiled rather, would you be able to take any current prospects, apply it to what you've seen here, and then identify players that should be sold?
That's a great curveball.
You're welcome.
Well, I can look at the current top five from pre-2003 and tell you that they look currently as if there is no trend that knocks them out. I will mention, I disagree with Francisco Alvarez in the top five hitters. And I disagree with a lot what the Mets do with their prospects, but I think that your Gunnar Henderson, while I like him, as you alluded, he is the only one without true pedigree in that top five. And a lot of his success is driven off of his previous year where the book wasn't out on him. Right now, he's looking like he might get demoted for Joey Ortiz. If you give me a second, I'll pull up the top prospects and see if I can't identify.
Well, I have our top five, which were all hitting prospects coming into the year. So I have to ask you a question. For your research, would you include Jordan Walker as a third baseman or an outfielder?
So I included him as an outfielder, but he would be drafted as a third baseman. So that does point to being one of the few third basemen. One of the things I did notice is third basemen started hitting the list more frequently as of late. And I think that has a lot to do with the trend that I brought up in our previous episodes. It used to feel like third base had more glove in it. Now it's where you put the bat.
Yep. It's a power-driven position at this point. One question, and the reason I brought that up in terms of where you're going to classify him, is because if we included him as an outfielder, and it sounds like for our purposes we're not going to, we would have had three outfielders in the top five, and I was going to tell everybody to sell the third one. Who do you think that third one was, Adam?
Carroll has graduated, so I don't... Is he?
I'm talking preseason. We're talking preseason here.
So you're talking Carroll, you're talking... See, I had Jordan Walker third, and I'm trying to remember who I switched him with.
Well, here's the fourth outfielder, or third outfielder, number four on the list, Jackson Churio.
Oof. So he hits a couple. He didn't have the pedigree.
Didn't have the pedigree necessarily. I mean, he was a million-dollar signing.
So he does have the $7 or the seven-figure trend, and I will point out, I didn't specifically find that. I have just previously read it. But he was he on... that's not fair. Everyone's on your radar. Was Jackson Churio a big-name prospect until the breakout?
No, he would have been similar to a Luis Lara that we've covered previously. Mm-hmm. He, you know, a seven-figure signing outfield prospect who ranked either at number 10 or just after that. That's basically where Churio would have been after his DSL season.
And so seven figures, but you're not going to get me saying sell Churio by any
means. I'm trying to bait you here, man.
I will not say that. I will, however, say AA hasn't been kind.
That is a true statement. All right. So let's get down to the brass tacks here. Right. So we're talking 21 years of data. Is a top five hitting prospect, assuming you roster that for fantasy purposes, is it worth it?
Yes. For the purpose of if you have the elite, as I've noted, there are trends that point out where the elite may not be. And that is your guys drafted out of the first round, international guys that don't hit. If you've got a top five guy that you believe in that doesn't have a pedigree problem, or for whatever reason, the third best in his class at that position, it's worth it, because that's where... I mean, you can see the data here. I keep going back to, you have 3 years in a row of top five where Giancarlo Stanton, Buster Posey, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado. You don't get those guys anywhere else, but if you got them early.
Yeah. So let's think about going into this next season. So 2024, the article that I just did for the Patreon was predicting basically a top 10 list of hitters for next year. Names like that would be Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
He fits all of your criteria here. He's going to probably succeed at the big league level, at least in some capacity.
Yep.
You have potentially, he's not hitting, so we'll see how this actually plays out. But we have Jordan Lawler. Has the pedigree, but sounds like he potentially has a problem based off of this information you found.
Mm-hmm. And I would like to point out, I posed the question last time of for Drew Jones, if anyone has cracked the top 10, fallen out and jumped back in. I didn't find that. So if you want a name that you might want to sell high on, I'm certainly more comfortable telling you to move that one quickly.
Sure. And, you know, I think we could probably do an entire episode on someone like Jones just because of, you know, his pedigree, not necessarily mm-hmm. coming into pro ball, but because he has bloodlines. But also just the fact that he's struggling to begin his career. I mean, that's a topic in and of itself. Looking at some of these other names that, you know, could be potentially top five prospects next year, we mentioned Churio. We'll see how that plays out based off of his current performance. Sounds like Ellie De La Cruz is going to graduate or at least see Cincinnati and then be probably pushed out for service time reasons. How about a guy like James Wood? He was, I believe, a second round pick, but had one of the more significant signing bonuses of any draftee.
And granted, I didn't look into the signing bonuses of draftees. And the one of my favorite things about the MLB is their draft structure allows for games like that to be played. But it would be this kind of data set would suggest James Woods might be a problem as well. And with that hit tool that kind of can come and go, it does suggest maybe he's one that you might want to consider moving. I don't feel nearly as comfortable saying that one as I do Drew Jones.
I'm really glad that I didn't go back more than 10 years in mind, because I think the presence of guys like Cameron Maybin, maybe Desmond Jennings, definitely Delman Young and all of the other names that we've talked about previously that didn't end up hitting. I think there's definitely similarities between Wood and all of those guys that came before them in terms of, you know, maybe it's long levers, maybe it's just an ability to turn on the fastball. You know, it could be anything, but I think Wood is one of those guys that's going to be incredibly high ceiling, potentially a very low floor too, but you know, time will tell on that. I don't want to, you know, deter from the work that you've done here, but that would kind of be my synthesis. I think between the two projects that we've created here, the guys like Wood, potentially definitely Churio, just because of what we've already discussed, you know, those might be the guys more apt, unfortunately, to not live up to their potential.
And that is another thing that I did notice. As people who, I use the data from MLB.com. I again, did as best as I could to find the preseason rankings. But I would like to point out, they got better. They got better at identifying the best players as the years went on. So there is some skewing of data here to, for example, the... I think it's 2005. There are four negative bats and Ricky Weeks. 2006, four negative bats and Justin Upton.
And I want to clarify something here too. Your negative bats that you're saying, what's that statistic again, or that metric?
So I used offensive WAR as like a counting stat to show longevity, and then WRC plus. To kind of show a rate stat.
Got it.
And those are the stats that I'm basing these negative bat comments off of, where as you can kind of tell, this is where some players really separate, you know, the Mike Trouts, the Bryce Harpers, away from the Justin Upton. You know, Justin Upton had 189 OWAR. Mike Trout has 595.
He is, I mean,
a newfound appreciation was.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He is just a generational player that nobody knew was a generational player. So I think trying to find the next Mike Trout, which is definitely an undertaking that people try to do every single year.
That's a fool's errand.
It is. And that's exactly what I was going to say. That would be my personal takeaway. You know, trying to identify the guy that leads this list, that's just an impossibility, basically. But getting something right below it, I think that's a more reasonable outcome.
Your Corey Seager.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Carlos Correa. Like, there are certain identifiable traits that these people had that, you know, so it's very interesting to look at. The last question that I really want to ask you, unless you have something else that you would like to address that we skipped here, is, you know, boil it down for me. What's your final takeaway, both from your project and potentially how it applies to what I did and just, I mean, fantasy baseball in general moving forward?
I think the biggest takeaway I had is that there are these ideas out there on, you know, your safest players, your riskiest profiles. It's not BS was one of my big takeaways. International guys are your biggest risk, and you can, you know, draft 10 of them and one of them turns out to be a regular starter, and someone else could, you know, draft the 30th best one and stumble upon a top 12 player kind of thing. Or in the inverse, your pedigree guys, your draft guys, your top, you know, 1, 2, 3 picks. College bats will get you safe results. You remove the Adley of it all, and it doesn't look great recently. You know, Torkelson kind of draws that down. Not to rag on him, but he didn't look great when we saw him, so it's kind of easy to. Andrew Benintendi, Dansby Swanson. They're safe, but they're not league winners.
Sure.
And I think a newfound love for the high school guys.
Well, I think we've probably established that high school guys have the most upside, right? And that's just because the guys with the most upside when they're eligible to be drafted usually don't move on to college. Makes complete sense. You know, millions and millions of dollars are being tossed at them. But traditionally, it's also just riskier that those players are going to succeed and hit what you might consider like their 50th percentile outcome.
Yeah. And to kind of not toot my own horn, but reinforce a recent statement I made on high school college guys or high school catchers. If you had to guess, what is the only high school catcher to crack this list? That's a lie. There's two.
It's gotta be. It's well, so the only one that I know for sure is Maurer.
Yep, that's one of them.
Because I distinctly remember him being drafted. Like, that's literally around the time that I was getting into baseball. But beyond that, I have no clue, man. None.
Darno.
No kidding, really. I guess he was a big pedigree guy, but I don't think he was was he a first-round pick?
Well, comp round, 37th.
Okay, sure. It counts.
So, but those are kind of the main takeaways I had. There are a couple other, you know, silly little things that I saw, such as there are some draft classes that really sucked. But I will ask you one more fun question, and then we can wrap this up.
Sure, sure.
There are 5 pairs of teammates that have cracked the top 5 together.
Okay.
Can you guess who they are?
Let me think. I know was it last year that it would have been Torkelson and Riley because everybody was debating who the number one guy from those two actually was. So I would definitely say them.
Yeah, a lot of people wasted their breath picking Tork last year.
Well, I was one of those people, so thank you. Really appreciate that. We know, too, that in recent history, Kalinic and J-Rod were there.
Yes.
Okay, so those are the easy ones. If we
there's
go beyond
one more easy one.
Well, clearly it's not because I can't think of it. Is it recent?
I'll give you years. 15, 14, and 06.
Are the 15 and 14 the same people?
No.
Oh. One of them had to have been the year that the Cubs were bad. So that could have been some combination of Baez, Bryant, and Russell.
2015 was...
they won in 16. They won the team. So it would have been that year.
Bryant and Russell in 15.
Okay.
Baez was in 14.
Was he joined by any of his classmates?
Nope.
Okay, then I have no idea on the 26 or 2006. I would never get there.
Buxton and Sano in 2014.
Oh, yeah.
And
I always forget that Sano was, you know, that highly ranked. We talked about that in the first episode of this podcast.
And then the other is Justin Upton and Stephen Drew.
It's quite the blast from the past.
Yep. Well, that's it's kind of what this whole thing is about.
I mean, that was my takeaway. It's just, like I said, reminiscing more than anything, looking at all the past failures I had for my fantasy team.
It's okay. You'll have plenty more in the future to worry about.
I can pretty much confirm that as a true statement. So, guys, this has been the fourth episode of the Backfields Podcast. Before we let you go, though, we have, unfortunately, to my detriment, kind of brought on a recurring segment of which hitter or prospect, I suppose. I know it's going to be a hitter, though, because that's what my preference is. Which prospect do I hate this week? Adam, who are you going to throw at me?
So, in all fairness to you, I make fun of your team plenty. I'm going to let you make fun of mine.
Hey, this is my kind of game. Let's do it.
Sidan Rafaela. Rafaela. Tell me about him. Why do you hate him?
Yeah, no, actually, I'm glad you bring him up. We talked about him a little bit in the anatomy series. So that would have been actually the last episode, episode 3, when we were talking about outfielders. I don't hate him as a prospect necessarily, but I don't necessarily buy his breakout from last year either. Some of the early results that we're seeing this year, are probably more reminiscent of what we saw of him as a player in 2021. So less power, more speed, definitely defensive value. I think that's always going to be there, but I do question the breakout from last year. Again, I'm a natural pessimist though, so that just may be some combination of that and his early season struggles. Or, you know, he's not really struggling in the grand scheme of things because he just stole 6 bases the other night, but at the same time, he's not flashing, you know, 25 home run power either. So time will tell. I don't hate him. I don't think he has, you know, the star level ceiling though, that some people were really throwing around on him. I can't tell you how many times I read like, oh my, he's going to be Mookie Betts or, you know, something to that effect. That's not the case. Just let's just stop it there.
This is, in all fairness to me, I was not a Mookie. This is a Mookie Betts guy. This is, he was available and a lot of people loved him. So I grabbed him to try to sell him. And unfortunately, no one wants him.
You know who he actually reminds me of? And I was thinking about this when I was covering the Daily Sheet the other day, but I didn't name drop it because it's not looking great for me. But Asturi Ruiz. He reminds me of, you know, the guy that had that big power outbreak in Double A and then followed it up this year. I think he hit his first home run in his first, you know, 100 at bats. I think you texted me that the other night.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a reasonable comp from an output standpoint. Position is going to be a little different, but yeah, I mean, maybe there's some parallels there in terms of a lighter than anticipated bat, but pretty big stolen base potential. Maybe that's what we're dealing with.
As a Ruiz,
which in a points league, you know, not a ton of value there. In a roto league, you need stolen bases, so I support it.
As a Ruiz hater, don't love it.
Well, I anticipate then that I will see him traded later this week. So you're welcome to our fellow league mates. All right, guys, that's it for us. This has been fun. This is episode 4 of the Backfields Pod. We will be back definitely next week. And I do want to mention, too, that we are going to start releasing these on Thursday just because that time slot opened up here at Prospects Live. So anticipate these dropping Thursday morning moving forward. Want to thank everybody for listening. We will be back next week with a topic that has not been decided. I am Jake. I was joined by Adam. We appreciate it.